Hello and welcome to the Browns Blitz. Today is Tuesday, November the 19th, and this is episode 28. I am Rod Bloom, and I will be your host today, and I am very excited to be joined by two people that I have known for quite a while, two fine writers, Shelley Harkar, who is a writer for The Grueling Truth, and Nick Padone, who writes for Big Play, Dog Pound Daily, and is also involved in some other things. So very excited to have both of these writers on, and we're going to kick things off. I guess the Browns are 2-0 in the division.
Yeah,
I love that.
I haven't verified this. I think Freddie said it, so I assume it's true. This is the first time that the Browns have beat both the Steelers and the Ravens since they've been back.
Yeah.
In 99, okay?
So since my birth.
Yeah,
I've never seen it.
I mean, I know they're 4-6, but, you know, that counts for something. Is this team built, you think, for the AFC North, or is it just a focus they have when they're playing within the division?
I mean, I definitely think you're going to hone in on the division rivals just a little bit better. And there's just the whole thing's amped up a little bit. I think it's just maybe a little bit of what's happening is, like you guys have said, you know, Freddie's learning, Baker's back, that kind of stuff, and a little bit of the right team at the right time. Because this team's not bad, but it's bad compared to all the insane hype that we were listening to in May and June and July and August. And I think that's where so many people just got knocked way off track. It's like, please tell me you didn't take this crap to the bank. It was fun, but you know, I think they're always going to come up a little sharper against the division, though.
You know, Rod, had you have asked me this time last week, I would have given you a completely different answer, because the Buffalo win was so, like, scrappy. Like, that was one of the ugliest football wins that I've ever seen in my life. Like, it seemed like the Browns were actively trying to lose that game, and they just won on accident. Like, it was one of the most frustrating four quarters of football that I've ever watched. And then this week, it seems like we did a lot of the same things in terms of running the ball, in terms of playing more, you know, man on defense instead of get into that, like, frustrating prevent where the Bills were just, like, marching down the field at times. It seemed like the Browns did a lot of things as well, and they played with such an edge against Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Like, we'll get into the fight, and like you said, you know, the media in general has just beaten the fight to the pulp already. But before the fight happened, there was a different aggressiveness and there was a different tone out of the Cleveland Browns that I hadn't seen yet this year. You know, whether it be Juju Smith-Schuster or Deontay Thompson or, you know, any of the Steelers receivers that were getting the ball, our secondary was swarming them. Same with when James Conner would run or when Jalen Samuels would get the ball out of the backfield. The defensive line was just swallowing them up. They played with such an urgency, such a tenacity. And even the Steelers players were saying, it came out today, a report from Aditi, who covers the Steelers in Pittsburgh, for I believe ESPN, said that even one of the linemen texted her after the game, like, they came out and they bullied us. Guys, I'll be honest with you. I don't think ever, since all my years of watching the Browns, I don't think I've ever seen the Browns be the bullies. And I'm cool with them being the bullies as long as they're disciplined about it. And up until the Myles Garrett incident, I thought they were disciplined. You know, that Demarius Randall hit was ugly. And, you know, he definitely led with the helmet. It deserved an ejection. But that's just a football play. And as long as they're, you know, playing tough and playing physical in terms of football plays on a football field, I'm not going to be against the Cleveland Browns being bullies. And to answer your question, Rod, I think that game showed me that they are built for the AFC North, because you know who else was a bully for all those years? The Baltimore Ravens. Mm-hmm. I still get a little freaked out when I see the purple and black uniforms, and their defense isn't what it used to be. And now they're more flashy and gaudy than they used to be with the way that, you know, they run the ball with Lamar and they run the ball with Ingram. Sometimes they even put RG3 back there in that Heisman set. So I definitely think, to answer your question, that this team is built for the AFC North. And I don't know if I would have answered that question the same way one week ago.
Well, let's get to the fight then. Let's just get this out of the way, guys. I just want to hear.
Yeah.
Let's hear your takes just briefly on, you know, on you know, either what you saw happen, or I think we kind of all feel like, I think most of Cleveland is unified on what we feel like happened. So what's your take on either, you know, what was in Miles' head, or, you know, or what you, who's responsible, you know, or how you feel about this? I'm going to let Shelly lead off here again.
Okay. Wow. I just remember seeing the play unfold, and, you know, like you said, I'm Miles Garrett's biggest fan. Hope you're listening, Miles. But, you know, my gut reaction was, get your hands off my man. you could just see, you know, Pouncey's kicking him, and Rudolph is charging him. And I think, I mean, obviously, no, you shouldn't have swung the helmet. You shouldn't have hit him in the head. Obviously, that's wrong. I can't say that enough. But when I listened to Rudolph's press conference, that I can't even use the words I'm thinking of what I'd like to call him, but for want of a better term, that punk was saying, oh, yeah, I went after him. I was mad. Oh, you were mad. Sunshine, we all get mad. Sit down and shut up, because DeCastro had that well in hand. He had a hold of Miles. He's pulling Miles back. There's plenty of real estate between Rudolph and Garrett, no matter who's holding whose helmet. And Rudolph chose to reinitiate that battle, which, I mean, I don't know how dumb you'd have to be to run after Miles Garrett without a helmet, but we see, you know, nothing smart happened. And I think that's what, you know, really solidified it all to me, is that, yes, Miles was wrong. Yes, completely out of character from what everybody says about the guy. But at the end of the day, Rudolph, sit your ass down and be quiet. It was done. DeCastro had Garrett. Everybody could have just shaken hands or flipped each other off or whatever, and we would have all gone about our way. But Rudolph said he had a bone to pick with him. He was angry. Sorry, Sunshine. We all have issues. That's just, it still makes me really angry. I've calmed down a lot, but
yeah, I understand.
I sleep at night now, so that's a good thing.
Well, that's a good start.
Yeah, for sure. You know, right when it happened, I was so blown away for all the reasons that Shelly just touched on. Like, the fact that it was Miles Garrett, and he's such a well-mannered guy. And, like, Mason Rudolph, I didn't think him to be out. Like, I didn't picture him to be this pest that he's kind of turned into, especially with all this fight drama.
Yeah.
You know, everyone said, you know, right when it happened, the morning after, which, by the way, it wasn't the biggest story in Cleveland. It wasn't the biggest story nationally in sports. It was the biggest story, period. You know, they used it on Saturday Night Live. Like, it beat out the Trump impeachment stuff. Like, this was the biggest story. And that's kind of what I feared when I saw it. And surely enough, that fear came to fruition. But the fact of the matter is, everyone was saying, I've never seen anything like this in all my years watching football. You know, adults are saying it. I've never seen anyone swing a helmet. Well, you know what, guys? You know what I've never seen? I've never seen a quarterback get sacked or get knocked down and then try to rip the defensive lineman's helmet off.
No, never seen that either.
You can't put all the blame on, you know, you can't put the blame on Mason Rudolph. You can't, they both earn their own respective piece of the blame, you know, but it boils down to the thing in the school, like in the schoolyard, that your parents, your teachers used to tell you. My parents definitely told me that it's not the kid that starts it, it's the kid that finishes it, or it's not the kid that tells the joke, it's the kid that laughs. You know, in sports all the time, there's fights and there's nitpicking, but it's always the guy that retaliates that gets the worst of it. Think of Draymond Green and all those finals that the Cavs played in, and all the feathers that he ruffled. but it was always Dante Jones on the bench that would get teed up, or always Kendrick Perkins on the bench that would be getting thrown out of those games. It was never their fault. That was always premeditated, know, from someone else. They were always instigated, but it's the same thing that happened with Mason Rudolph, and Miles lost his head. And like you said, Shelley, it's a one-time incident. This is a standalone type of thing. This isn't who Miles gets. I'm not going to, you know, pretend like I'm the guy's best friend, but I've definitely seen him in both social settings and in practice settings. And this just isn't who he is. Like, he's a locker room guy. The teammates love him. And now they're probably going to have to be without him.
Yeah.
So I think we kind of feel like the Browns are, I can feel like this is typical. The Browns kind of get the short end of the stick on a lot of these things. Always. And then Mike Tomlin, and we've already heard this, you know, Rudolph, what he's done. Mike Tomlin comes out and says, I don't know that we did anything to make this happen. What the heck is he talking about? Did he not watch? Did he not watch the film? I guess he's trying to defend his guys, but it's crazy to not take any responsibility whatsoever when you're the coach.
It reminds me a lot of like the Marlon Humphrey choking Odell Beckham thing in the Ravens game. Remember when that was our biggest concern? It's like these guys don't think that like there's cameras, guys. Yeah. It's 2019. Yeah. Like, not only are there are a dozen of cameras that the broadcasts use, every person in the stands has a camera in their pocket, or more times than not, in their hand.
We've seen this 100 times in slow motion. We know exactly what happened.
Yeah, and for him to say that, like you said, he was stepping up to the bat for his guy or whatever. But I stand up for Mike Tomlin because I think he's a better coach than a lot of people make him out to be, and they probably don't have 5 wins if they have just any Joe Schmo coach, because that is not a very talented football team, offensive side of the ball. But for him to say that, and he says some other questionable things too, it's a time like that, you know, where Bill Belichick is just the oldest and the wisest, because he just will give a brush over, like, look, what happened, I'm on to whoever the Steelers are playing next week. I'm on to next week. We're over that. We're past that. We're standing with Mason, and we're past it. You know, like, he has to make the headlines about him, because that's who Mike Tomlin is. Freddie Kitchens does the same damn thing.
Yeah, Does Freddie have any responsibility from a discipline standpoint for having this happen?
Oh, Shelley, you could start.
You know, you're not the first person who's asked me this. And I'm still going, if it were a different player, I think I would be more likely to say, well, Freddie should be coaching more discipline and da-da-da. But, I mean, we've seen the penalties situation improve. Obviously, something is being done correctly in the realm of, hey, we're not false starting. Hey, we're not offside every time we look at the ball. But I just, because of the character that you see in Garrett, I don't know what Freddie could have actually done with that specific situation, because I don't see, you know, I mean, we're not talking a hot-headed rookie. We're not talking a guy with, you know, a history of domestic violence or any of the other things that you see in a lot of players. You're talking about, you know, the quiet guy who writes poetry and is the stand-up face of, you know, nice people everywhere. Right. So I don't really know that a lot of this has to go on Freddie's plate. I mean, maybe in a grand overarching scheme of you're the coach and the buck's supposed to stop here kind of thing, but I don't see this as a lot on Freddie. I just don't.
I see how the argument makes sense, because for Freddie, this has been kind of a troubling year. Like, not only is the team 4-6 and underachieving, but there's been so many, like we said, there's been so many headlines that have not been positive. You know, think of the Steelers game alone before the fight even happened. You got Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry continually yawning in the direction of Mike Tomlin. And, like, I'm all for that. Like, I'm all for, like, the taunt, you know, not taunting, but for the talking junk and stuff like that. I think the biggest thing, one of the biggest things with the Browns, there's obviously a lot of big things, is it's still a bunch of individuals that have not come yet together as a team, and a bunch of talented individuals at that. And I think that's where you put a lot of the blame on Freddie, because you got the at the beginning of the year, we had uniform violations out the wazoo. You know, we had the whole watch thing, and everything was, oh, look at me with the Richie Mill watch, and make of that what it was. Then you had the visor and the cleats, and then you had Jermaine Whitehead getting on Twitter and threatening the lives of media members and fans. And now this Myles Garrett incident, right? It's all these stupid little things that I think kind of add up. And then it looks at your head coach like, dude, these are this is a bunch of individual acts that are happening because there's no team goal in mind. Like, everyone wants it to be, oh, look at me, instead of, oh, look at the Cleveland Browns. We're going to get to the playoffs. We're going to do something that hasn't been done before. There's no we. It's a whole lot of, oh, look at me and my watch. Oh, look at me and Jarvis and our cleats. It's not really the team, you know? I think that's my biggest frustration with out of Freddie, more than anything, probably more than even the play calls.
So do you guys think this brings the team together? Do you think it actually ends up, I don't want to say helps the team, because you don't, because losing Miles is not a plus, but for the rest of the team, does it help to bring some of those individuals together and help them play more as a team?
I think so. I think it does, just because of all the reasons that it's kind of now like us against them type of mentality, which I think this team was already starting to get there with, like, all some of the blown calls and stuff that they'd been frustrated with. And Baker won his appeal on that for criticizing.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I felt like this was kind of coming, that, like, and it seems like they kind of have, at least hopefully, you know, it doesn't take one game to do it. They've kind of created an identity out of it. You know, a lot of people were giving Mac Wilson a really hard time for his Twitter post. I'm not sure if you guys saw that. Mac Wilson tweeted a picture that said 1-0. That's kind of their mantra, like, just go 1-0 every week and they'll be in the playoffs. So he tweeted 1-0, hashtag onto the Dolphins. And it was a picture of him kind of like flexing, standing like big tough guy over Juju Smith-Schuster, like holding his head when he had the concussion. And it was a cool picture, but it was just really bad timing. But
because of the concussion.
Right. Yeah. Because of the concussion and because of the Myles Garrett thing. But it feels like they kind of are like almost identifying with this. Like, we're going to be the bullies and we're not going to lie down anymore. So I think that could be a sign of them kind of coming together.
I mean, adversity, usually you're either going to pull together or you're going to fall apart. And it seems like, just from the stuff I've been, you know, seeing in press conferences, reading and stuff, and I was really impressed with Sheldon Richardson and just how he went to bat for Miles and how he just, it's like, that was just such a glimmer of, okay, maybe this guy could, you know, step up. Obviously, no one is Miles but Miles, but it's kind of like, okay, yeah, you had a lot of good things to say. All right, you spoke your mind, and maybe you can help fill those shoes. It seems like, I think it's going to pull them together, not tear them apart.
Yeah, I think you have to be optimistic about the defensive line. I mean, I know we're talking about losing Miles, but for how that defensive line played against the Steelers line, and how good that offensive line is. And that wasn't all just Myles Garrett. And Olivier Vernon was not playing in that game. So I think we can be optimistic that hopefully that the defensive line can at least hold its own going forward. I want to get just kind of a perspective out of each of you as to what you think may happen with the hearing that Miles has coming up tomorrow morning. Do you expect any change in the suspension? I don't know. I think I kind of expect something to happen. I don't know what it's going to be. So what are you both expecting?
Well, I feel optimistic about it just because it's happening and it's a hearing and he's going in person. So when I heard that, I was kind of relieved because, like, I know, you know, he's well-spoken, and he's not going to say anything that he's going to regret in there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the whole hearing to me, especially because this just happened Thursday, so it's happening 6 days after the incident, I feel like this has a mirror. To me, it's very similar to what happened on Saturday with the Colin Kaepernick thing. I got to say, guys, I think him going in there, he's going in and the decision is already made. Like anything that he says to Goodell, or, you know, the meeting is with, you know, somebody from the league office, is just going to go in one ear and out the other. This is more of like a PR move. It's a move to save for the NFL to save a face, to save their own face, you know, by saying, you know, we're letting him come in and state his case. The fact of the matter is, guys, like they say, you know, innocent until proven guilty. That's not the case here. Miles was already, he was already proven guilty when they suspended him indefinitely. And they said at minimum the end of the season. I think best case situation, and this is super best case, he walks out of tomorrow with a 4-game suspension. But I just don't see it. I think it's going to be the rest of the year. And, you know, they'll tell him kind of see you in 2020, my friend.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I gotta agree with every single word. I wish that wasn't the case. But yeah, I don't see, it's almost like, well, we have to have this hearing because somebody says he has to have a chance to appeal. But like you said, his mind's made up.
It's decided. Yeah.
I don't know. I think a little bit of that is me with the Cleveland chip on my shoulder, just expecting crap from everybody else because that's what I've seen my entire life. But yeah, if we could get out of this with four, even if he is out for the rest of this season, if we can just not look at next season as something where we're going to have a bunch of consequences, I would consider that to be almost like a victory.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there, Shelley. So if this were not Myles Garrett, a player on another team,
well,
where do you think that player would be? Now, just pick a random team, you know, any team, and then pick the Patriots, okay? How much different would it be for a random team or a New England Patriot if this happened?
Oh, that's tough. I think a regular team, like, it makes it so much better because, like, the ESPN, right, they do, like, their 25 best players under 25. Myles Garrett, I think, was the best player on there that wasn't a quarterback. So, like, with that, like, you can't get rid of him. But I think if it was any, like, ordinary defensive end, like, you know, say the Cardinals, the Arizona Cardinals, they're a good team. They're not crazy. You know, they might make the playoffs. I think if this happens to them, the team might just step in and kind of, like, just release them. You know, if it was any normal player, they'd probably get released. But because Miles is like a generational talent, you know, we hope, you know, for many more years to come here in Cleveland. He's already been a Pro Bowler in his young career. I think it makes it kind of harder. But I think if it was another, you know, say Khalil Mack did this, I think he'd be facing the same penalties just because there's such emphasis now on protecting the quarterback, on protecting the head in general, and Myles Garrett violated
everything.
NFL. Yeah, the NFL's two holiest things, and the quarterback and the head, and that's why we're in this predicament that we're in right now.
Are you guys concerned with the Miami Dolphins? How do you feel going into that game?
I think it's all on which Fitzpatrick comes to play. Because when he's doing pretty good, he's doing pretty good. I mean, since he got the starting position back, you know, he's had, like, what, 6 touchdowns thrown for over, I think, like 900 and something yards. So if that Fitzpatrick comes, I think we're going to have to blitz the crap out of him until we can see what our 4-man rush may or may not do. If the crappy Fitzpatrick comes, I'm not too worried because their ground game is sad, and the only guy
not very good.
Well, and then, you know, it's like they've got injuries, and then that they just cut Walton, who was under suspension anyway. But yeah, there's not a lot. I was looking over their roster and their depth chart a little while ago, and it's like there was just, I mean, Devontae Parker, he's probably, if they bring a good Fitzpatrick and he can connect with Parker, then I think they have a greater chance of rattling us. But I don't see a lot there.
Yeah. Here's your sad stat of the week out of me. Ryan Fitzpatrick is 5-1 all time against the Cleveland Browns. 5 wins, only 1 loss.
Oh, but
I think most quarterbacks probably have a similar record.
It's probably most of them are over 500. Yeah.
You know, but 5-1. You know, you definitely don't like to hear that. I think it's more on the Browns. What the Browns come out of the locker room and they're like versus whatever the Dolphins try to do. Because if the Browns come out and they play like they did against the Ravens and the Steelers, they could beat anyone, including the Patriots. Oh, yeah. You know?
Yeah, I agree with you.
But if they come out and they play against Tennessee, you know, because they're excited and they think that it's the Dolphins and we're going to roll over them, then it's going to suck. I think this is a huge opportunity for the – it sounds dumb to say it because, like, it's literally the Miami Dolphins. They're trying to lose. Yeah. I think this could be a huge opportunity for the Browns' morale to kind of get the offense in rhythm, you know, finally get Odell in the end zone a couple times.
Keep
Baker's touchdown to interception streak rolling. And I think we could be in for a really good day and something that the Browns could really build off of. However, on the other hand, if they lose this one and they come out and they look undisciplined and Baker's turning the ball over and Freddie is, you know, looking clueless, this could be the game where the wheels fall off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Miami's surprised more than one team already. So.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, those two accidental wins.
Yeah, they better not take them too lightly. But you know that. Well, guys, I want to thank you both for coming on and sharing your thoughts. Shelly Harkar from The Grueling Truth. Shelly, why don't you give your Twitter account so everybody can give you a follow?
Oh, sure. It's S-H-E-L-L-E-Y, Shelly, 0514.
All right. And Nick Padone from Big Play, Dog Pound Daily, ESPN, and countless other places. Nick, thanks for your time tonight. And why don't you give out your Twitter handle as well, please?
Yeah, for sure. You can follow me on Twitter at NickPadone12.
Nice and easy.
Yeah.
All right. It's been great talking to you guys.
You too.
This was for sure.
A lot of fun, guys.
A lot of fun, yeah.
How are we doing tonight, Big Dog?
Well, we're doing pretty good. I don't know, man. I feel like I got hit in the head with a helmet.
I know what you mean.
I mean, goodness gracious. I mean, these games are so hard to pick. I mean, I have never seen a Sunday like last Sunday. I mean, I think you had almost 20 teams that scored under 20 points. You had double-digit dogs beating teams straight out. There's just so much parity. I heard Nathan Zagura on Cleveland Browns Daily make the comment today that I think there's maybe 4 really good teams, probably 25 teams that are parallel to each other, and then you got 3 or 4 really bad teams that everybody's going to beat. And that's what makes it hard is because there's so much parity that anything can happen in any game.
Yeah, it's been tough. I know people, if they haven't followed you a lot, you know, maybe they've just been listening to the show. So they've heard some of the picks and they're going to hear the record.
Right.
But they need to understand that just how tough this period of picking games has been. So we were talking, you know, before we started recording about, you know, how you said how this weekend was so good for Vegas.
Yeah. And, yeah. This was a huge week for Vegas. I had heard that I was reading something and it's been years since they've made this kind of money. And really it's been the whole season, but this last Sunday in particular, the bettors out there got beat really bad. The Atlanta game against Carolina, Carolina, I believe, was 5.5-point favorite at home. Everybody and their brother jumped all over Carolina because Atlanta had upset. What was it? New Orleans. Remember they went in and beat New Orleans up the week before. Yeah. So everybody's thinking, okay, they're going to come back to earth. Mm. And the money that was bet on Carolina was outrageous, and Vegas just sucked it all up, man. I mean, it just Atlanta. I mean, it wasn't even close. The game they beat them terribly. And what was the other game? There was another game that was a little out there that try to look here. I had it written down. Oh, everybody, and I liked this game. I like the Jets. Remember I told you I like the Jets. We started talking about them. I said, I'm going to take the Jets at the Skins. Uh-huh. So I got that one right. But the money on the Skins at home -1 to the reeling Jets with Haskins starting was huge. People put tons of money on the Skins and got pounded by that. So what I'm saying is this is really hard to do right now. Picking these games, there's hard to pick up trends. That's usually where you can, you know, you make your money. You figure out the trends of these teams, and then when you see who they're playing, and you figure out their schemes with each other. The what I'm really having a lot of success with is the college. College has been really good this year. It's not crazy. It's basically chalk. It's going exactly what it's supposed to. You got Ohio State, I believe, is -18 to Penn State this week. Another top 10 team coming into the shoe, -18, and Ohio State's probably going to beat them by 30, if not more. Uh-huh. And I mean, it's just, they can't set the number high enough on those games. But as far as the pros go, it's just so much parity. All you can do basically is just try to study it as much as you can, and pick the games that look the most logical. Or, you know what? I got a friend that flips a coin. And he does. He does. We're in a big party each week. And he said, you know what? I sit here and I analyze these games and I spend hours and I try to break them down, and I'm winning 3 games and losing 12, you know. He goes, or I'm 4-11. He goes, hell with it. I'm just going to start taking a quarter out and heads for the home team, you know? And I don't know. We'll just do the best we can. That's all we can do.
Yeah, that's right. So you've got a few picks that you want to run through first before we do our picks.
Yeah, let's go ahead and run through them. Last week, you and I, you know, we do our head to head. We were both 1-2 last week. You lost with Jacksonville +3. You lost with the Bears +7, but you came back, got Kansas City last night -3.5.
3.5.
And you won that one. I took the Dolphins at home against Buffalo with the points and got beat. I had Texans +4 at Baltimore, and they didn't even get off the bus. I mean, 41-7, give me a break. And then my winner was the Jets. I had the Jets +1, which I liked that. They went into Washington, and that was a comfortable win. And then I hit my over-under. I had the Bears and the Rams -41, so I hit that one. So for you and I right now, I'm 3-6. You're 4-5 in our head-to-head. We're going to turn that around. Hopefully, like I said, it's been pretty brutal, but
it has. Yeah,
it has been. But you know what? It's fun, and we'll see what we can do. So I'll get right at it. What I'm going to give you first off, I'm going to give you my underdog game. I don't understand how these teams are falling to the Ravens the way they are. I just don't see the greatness of the Ravens. You shut down Lamar Jackson and then you basically run the ball against them and you'll beat them. The Patriots going in there and losing was, I couldn't believe it. And then you had Houston basically didn't even show up, but they were terrible. My underdog pick of the week is I'm going to take the Rams on Monday Night Football, getting 3 points against the Ravens. I think the wrong team's favorite. The Rams have been a little sloppy and not playing real well, but their defense is solid. And what I think they're going to do is they're going to have Clay Matthews Jr. will be the spy on Lamar Jackson. He'll follow him. He'll watch everywhere he goes. And I think Donald up front is going to cause havoc. And with the Rams being at home, I don't think it's going to be a high scoring game. I figure it's going to be maybe 2017, 2014, something like that. But I think the wrong team's favored. So I'm going to take the Rams plus the three on Monday night against the Ravens. My over-under game of the week is going to be the Jets and the Raiders. You got the Raiders are going into New York to play the Jets. It's at 46.5. I don't see a lot of scoring there. What I think is going to happen, Jets have a really good defense. Raiders have a decent defense. I think it's going to be a back-and-forth game. And I think one team's going to do the scoring, and the other team's basically not going to, you know, they're not going to stay in the game very long. And I actually like the Jets at home in that game. But my over-under on that, it's 46.5. I'm going to take the Raiders-Jets game under 46.5. Okay, so we've got that down. Now let's do our three-team teaser. My three-team teaser this week on the six spread is I'm going to take the Bengals at home against the Steelers, and I'm going to take the Bengals. They're 6.5, and I'm going to get them with another six. So I'm going to have the Bengals plus 12 against the Steelers. I'm also going to take the Buccaneers plus 10, and they're at Atlanta. So I'm going to take the Buccaneers. I think that's going to be a pretty high-scoring game. I'll take Buccaneers plus 10. Mm-hmm. And then I am going to take the Bears even at home. They're playing the Giants, and they're minus 6, and that's in Chicago. So I'm going to take that minus 6 and get that down to even. So I got the Bengals plus 12, Tampa Bay plus 10, and the Bears even. My best bet of the week, I think this is easy. I think it's going to be a blowout. I'm going to guess somewhere in the area of about 41-10, and that's going to be the Cleveland Browns over the Miami Dolphins. Cleveland is going to be, they're going to be just ready to roll after what happened Thursday night. The defense is going to be committed to playing this game for Myles Garrett. They're going to be all over Fitzpatrick. He may get lucky and get a bomb off and get a score, but I think the Browns offense showed that they are starting to gel against a very good Pittsburgh defense where we actually could have scored more points. But I really think that Miami is coming into Cleveland the wrong time. The Browns are not a happy football team right now. And I believe Freddie has got these guys into this theory of let's just go 1-0 each week. They've put together wins against, Buffalo, who has an excellent defense. They just beat another excellent defense in Pittsburgh. Dolphins don't have an excellent defense, and their running game is, I think they're down to their second or third string running back now, and the guy is averaging, I think it's 1.3 yards per carry. It's not good.
Yeah.
No, it's not good, and Cleveland should come out and absolutely devastate Miami. We're by the middle of second quarter, we're going to know the outcome of the game. But that's my best bet. I think the Browns are going to roll, and I got a minus 10.5. My underdog pick of the week is the Rams plus 3 on Monday night against Baltimore. My over-under is the Jets-Raiders game, and that's going to go under 46.5. And my three-team teaser using 6 points is the Bengals plus 12 at home against the Steelers, Tampa Bay plus 10, and the Bears are even. Hopefully I can get those to do good things for me, and hopefully if you're going to play any of those, that they'll do their I'll do the best for you too. And now I guess we come to that part where it's me against Rod and see what Rod can do here with his picking this week.
Yeah, well, I don't want to pick games that were necessarily going to be games that you're going to pick or already picked. So let me go another direction here.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I don't care if you pick a game that I've picked.
You don't care if I pick your best bet?
I don't care if you take the Browns. No, absolutely not.
Okay. I'm gonna take the Browns then. I'm gonna take the Browns and give up the 10.5.
Sure.
Because I think they're gonna spank the Dolphins.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, that's a good pick. That don't bother me if you take my pick. That makes me feel pretty good there. Okay, so you got the Browns game. All right here. And then I'm gonna look at this card and I'm gonna take the Texans at home. On Thursday Night Football, they just got embarrassed. I think them just having that 3.5-day rest and coming right back playing Thursday is good for them. They need to get right back on the field after getting pounded by Baltimore, and they're going to be home, and they're going to be playing the Colts, who I believe they lost Marlon Mack, their running back, to a broken hand. Even if he plays, it's not going to be like he plays a lot. But I'm going to take the Texans -4 on Thursday Night Football.
I like that one. Yeah. As much as it kills me, I'm going to take the Ravens and give up the 3 points against the Rams.
Okay. See, you went with me with one, and you went against me.
I'm going to go against you, and as much as I really hope I'm right. You know, if I'm wrong on that one, and the Ravens lose that game, I'll be happy. So yeah, I'll win jinx. Either way.
The jinx.
I'll win either way. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm jinxing them. That's right.
So by picking them, you're telling me that you think they're legitimate.
Well. Or I don't think the Rams are one of the two.
Right.
One of the two. The Rams do not look the same as when they played the Browns.
No, they don't.
Yeah, I don't fear the Rams like I did before the season started. That's all. I don't think the Rams are the team to beat them. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. I guess on the flip side, I'm just not a believer in the Ravens. I know they beat the Patriots. I know they beat Seattle.
I don't think they're all that either. Because
I look at the Patriots game, we lost that on 3 plays. The first 3 plays of that game, we lost that game because we outscored them 13-10 after that for the rest of the game. And you know, and I know that the Browns should have beat Seattle. I mean, we were blowing them out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
You know, and we just, and then I know that we walked into Baltimore and that wasn't even a contest. Cleveland just walked in there and pounded them. So I don't know. I think everybody's just so overhyped about Lamar Jackson. I think he's still a running back. But
yeah.
Anyways, yeah. Hey, man, I hope that you put the whammy on him by taking him.
I'll gladly take the loss there.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with the champs, man. I think I'm going to take the Patriots -6.5 at home to the Cowboys. I don't believe in the Cowboys at all. They are, to me, an average football team. They got a couple standout players, you know, with Zeke Elliott and Dak Prescott. Mari Cooper's good. Michael Gallup's pretty good. But I think you're talking about walking into Foxborough. And I think, it's hard to win there. And I think when I think about the Cowboys, I can't really have any confidence in them because I saw them get absolutely destroyed by the Jets in a primetime game. And I think the Cowboys are basically, you slow down Zeke, which it hasn't been hard to do. He's not really performing up to Zeke level this year. Mm-hmm. And then you got them. Once you stop the run with them and make Prescott have to beat you, I think that's what you're going. That's what you're going to get them. And I clearly will take Bill Belichick over Jason Garrett. Not that I'm a Patriots fan, but in any way, shape, or form, I just think that they're so much better than the Cowboys.
Well, I could see the Cowboys playing with them, but I could also see it being a game that gets out of hand. So
yeah,
that's why I kind of stayed away from that one. I'm going to go the Broncos-Bills. So the Broncos are getting 4 points in that game?
Yeah, in Buffalo, the Broncos are getting 4.
I'm going to take the Broncos in that game. I think the Broncos match up well with the Bills. I think the Broncos are a team a lot like the Cleveland Browns that run the ball and play tough defense. And I just think they have, and they've had some tough games lately. I think they've got a good shot of beating the Bills. I know the records would say otherwise, but I'm going to take the Broncos with the 4 points.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take, a lot of people would look at this and go, are you out of your mind? I'm like, no. I am taking the Bengals +6.5 at home against Steelers. The Bengals have not won a game this year. They are due. So, and Pittsburgh looks absolutely horrendous. They have injuries. I mean, first of all, Mason Rudolph's horrible. Okay.
Yeah.
He's horrible. Who's he going to throw the ball to this week? They're all hurt.
Right.
They're all hurt. They're in concussion protocol. And James Conner is out again with another shoulder injury.
Right.
So what are they going to do offensively against Cincinnati? Where, turn it around, you still got Joe Mixon and you still have Tyler Boyd on the other side and that young upstart quarterback that they've got playing. And they're playing at home and it's a division game. And they may be, in a terrible place right now, but they are at home and that place will be rocking because they're playing the Steelers. So I like the Bengals. I love the Bengals with the 6.5, but I think the Bengals can beat them. I mean, just because the Pittsburgh Steelers are just so banged up right now, I can see the Bengals getting their first win this week.
Yeah, I mean, my first thought there was that the Steelers would be all fired up and come in and just beat the crap out of the Bengals. But I think you're right. I think there's a good chance the Steelers could be looking past the Bengals, looking toward next week against the Browns too.
Sure.
So they can go in and get their butts kicked this week too.
They can go in and get spanked, man.
Yeah, I mean the Bengals. I watched them play this week because I had a guy on the Raiders playing on my fantasy team.
Right.
So they gave the Raiders all the Raiders wanted.
Right.
So I like that pick, and of course I would like to see the Bengals beat the Steelers. I would like to see the Rams beat the Ravens, and I want to see the Browns
beat
the Dolphins. So I'll be happy.
Well, that's like I said, I'm just looking at Pittsburgh overall, and I'm going, they're so beat up. If the Bengals are gonna get a win this year, and one that is like their Super Bowl. This is their Super Bowl, man. You've got the Pittsburgh Steelers walking into your house, and this is really a chance to,
give
the fan base something to cheer about this year, by beating the Steelers. Yeah. I mean, look, when we were 0-16, I mean, we went into that last game of the season in Pittsburgh like, man, if we could just win this game.
Right.
If we could just win this game and make it all better. And who was the receiver that we just got rid of that was a complete bust? The one that had all the tennis shoes.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to totally blank out on it right now.
But who I'm talking about? Remember he dropped the ball that was for first down at the end of the game. It set us up to win the game, and he dropped it. And I said, how appropriate. How this year has gone, it was so appropriate that he dropped the ball right in his hands and we lost that game. What you were saying too, I didn't even think about it, but it is true. They're going to totally look by Cincinnati because all they're thinking about is next week revenge against the Browns, which they're not going to get revenge against us because we're going to walk in there totally healthy. I mean, well, we're not going to have Garrett and we'll have Ogunjobi back.
Hopefully, Vernon, at that point.
Vernon should be back. We lost our safety to the torn Achilles, Morgan Burnett, so he's out. But, what a difference with Kareem Hunt in there, how more flow that offense. And, he's a heck of a receiver out of that backfield. He's such a weapon, man.
I play a lot of two-man backfield.
I mean, they're so tough in there together because you just don't know who's going to get the ball or what they're going to do. I remember a couple times, Freddie, when he took Duke Johnson and and Chubb and did the wishbone a few times, and I thought that was kind of cool, man.
Yeah, yeah, I like that. Especially when you've got Chubb and Hunt back there.
Oh,
and you got two top, whatever you want to call it, top three, top five backs back there.
To me, they're two of the top. I would say there's not too many running backs out there that I would take over either one of those guys. You've got Zeke that is basically come back to earth. You've got Gurley he's done. His knees are just arthritic. He's shot. Yeah. Saquon Barkley has been absolutely horrendous this year. They're so unhappy right now in New York. In the morning, I listen to the fans sometimes in New York on the radio.com, and they're just like, when is Barkley going to show back up again? I mean, he's been, if you go back and look at his numbers, like last four or five games, been horrible. I like Kamara in New Orleans, but
yeah.
Defensive have adjusted to that guy to the point where he's not killing people like he was. I mean, Kareem Hunt, before he got in trouble, to me, was probably the top back, between him and Gurley and Zeke. Now you got Chubb. They're awful strong back there. And I hope they don't just keep him for a year and then turn around, try to trade and get something for him. I love to see him keep him together. As long as they're both happy splitting carries or being there together, I'd never break it up.
They seem pretty happy. They do. Yeah, I mean, you have to like Christian McCaffrey and Dalvin Cook. So those guys are right up there, obviously, too. But beside those guys,
you know what?
There's not many other guys in the discussion.
You know what? You're right. McCaffrey is a stud. Only thing I worry about him is his size. How long is he going to be able to take the pounding? Dalvin Cook's having a great year. Yeah, I'm glad you brought those guys up. I guess I was so turned off by Carolina last week in their performance. I didn't think about McCaffrey.
Well, to me
right now, if I redid my fantasy draft right now, to me, McCaffrey's the best pick you can take in fantasy. That guy is just a machine.
Oh,
I had him last year, and I wanted to get him again this year. And that guy took him right in front of me, and I had Pat Mahomes, so I took Pat Mahomes with the next pick. But there's some really good backs, and we're very fortunate to have two of the top four or five backs in the league on our team. And I think we got two of the top 10 receivers in football. I think Jarvis Landry, you know, people don't look at him as a top 10 guy, but you know, there's not too many guys in the league that have hands like Jarvis Landry. You know, I mean,
he's
so good. I'm really excited. And Njoku could be back. And that really helps because it opens up the middle of the field. And one of my things I kept thinking going into this year was, man, Njoku could have a great year because they're going to be doubling up on Odell and, you know, they're going to be all over Jarvis and, man, this guy's going to be down the middle of the slot and doing his thing. And unfortunately, he got hung out to dry when Baker threw it a little high against the Jets and got his ankle broke. But, you know, it is what it is. I can still see the Browns running the table here at the end. I've been saying I think they can run the table.
They have a shot, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Baltimore coming into Cleveland. We've already beat them. The only game I'm really, really worried about is that darn game at Arizona.
Yeah, that's going to be a challenging game.
That looked
like an easy game before the season. Yeah.
Right.
That's a case of the schedule changing on you.
Right. It's not that I think they're better than us because they're clearly not. I just think they could cause a problem, especially with Myles Garrett out, you know, trying to contain Murray. But you know what, though? Like I said, I think Cleveland's offense is really getting ready to click, and I think they're going to start they're going to start averaging around over 30 points a game here at the end of the year because these defenses they're getting ready to go against, they should be able to really put it on them, and I think it starts big time Sunday.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why it shouldn't. So you want to summarize our picks real quick, and then we're going to get on out of here.
Yeah, let's get out of here. Okay, so your pick, Rod's pick this week is he's got the Browns minus 10.5. He's got the Ravens minus 3, and he's got Denver plus 4. I'm going to take the Texans with a big bounce back on Thursday night home against the Colts -4. I'm going to take the Patriots -6.5 against the Cowboys. And I'm going to take those Bengals +6.5 against Pittsburgh. My best bet was Cleveland -10.5. My underdog was the Rams +3 on Monday night against the Ravens. My over-under was the Jets and the Raiders under 46.5. And the one that I really love is my three-team teaser with a six-point spread is the Bengals +12, Tampa Bay +10, and the Bears even. Hopefully, we're talking about big wins this week. And I'll be honest with you, as bad as it's been and as hard as it's been, man, I'll take 50-50. If I go 50%, I'll be happy. If we can do better than that, you know, then that's just, you know, icing on the cake, bud.
That's right. All right. Well, this has been the Browns Blitz. We will catch you all next time.